9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock. It's Tuesday, October 2nd, 2007. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. This week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ah, the Wisconsin idea. The borders of the university are the borders of the state. That goes back to the days of fighting Bob La Follette and his effort to incorporate the expertise of the university in with the policy-making work of the state government and try to find some answers to some tough questions at the time, and they were very good at doing that. Well, there is a state legislator and a University of Wisconsin professor who want to revive that Wisconsin idea and use the expertise of the university and all its learning and research as a way to help state legislators and policymakers form a policy about some key issues in Wisconsin. And instead of trying to deal with them all at once, they've decided to take them on one at a time, beginning with the funding of K-12 education. And so this hour, we're going to take a look at this idea and what they're up to. We have two guests to help us do that. Before I introduce them, I want to give the phone numbers and give you a chance to call in and weigh in on the issue of financing of K-12 education. That's been a controversial issue for a number of years. Nobody seems to like the property tax. On the other hand, no one seems to have found a way to get around having to pay one. So we're stuck between two conflicting ideas, and there's been a great deal of discussion, but not very much concrete that's been done to relieve the property tax burden on the citizens of the state. Well, that's something that financing K-12 education could well be the cornerstone of correcting the property tax problem. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number to call to join our discussion. That's good anywhere you can hear this. 800-642-1234. 263-1890 if you're in Madison. 263-1890. We have with us in studio today Corey Mason, a Democratic state representative from Racine, and Harry Brighouse, professor of educational policy studies at UW-Madison. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
The I'll start with you, Representative Mason. Where did what led you to going back to the university to try to find some expertise to deal with state problems?
Yeah, it's a great question. My experience with the Wisconsin idea really came from a unique experience working 10 years ago now as a legislative staffer in the state Senate for then State Senator Lynn Edelman. But I was still finishing my undergraduate degree. And so I had this sort of natural interaction between watching the legislature function and then going to the university to take classes and hearing about all these great resources that they had. And then that same year, there was an article that was published in the Blue Book about the history of the Wisconsin idea. And it really sort of galvanized my enthusiasm for the rich tradition that Wisconsin has that really addressed some of society's biggest problems about 100 years ago. And we got things like workers' compensation, unemployment insurance. We were the first state to introduce a minimum wage. It's, you know, a real legacy that sometimes we take for granted and have forgotten. So when I became a legislator last year, we started talking about the school funding formula, for an example. And I thought about reviving it in this way, simply because in addition to the school funding formula being imperfect and having this tension between property taxpayers and providing adequate education to our children, it's also very complicated. I would ask my own school district, well, if I wanted to do something to help Racine Unified School District, should I ask for more funding in general aid or categorical aid? And the answer that I got was always sort of, well, it depends. Or, well, you got to look at the whole picture. And it became very clear to me that I didn't really understand the complexities of the school funding formula. When I got to Madison and started talking to other legislators, it became even clearer to me that most legislators didn't really understand all the complexities of the school funding formula. So, you know, my view of it is before we go and figure out if we're going to abandon the school funding formula or amend it or tweak it, we really ought to do our homework and know what we're talking about. And I had a great professor in Professor Brighouse as an undergraduate and sort of reached out to him to talk about ways that we could get legislators to interact with some faculty at the university to learn more about the funding formula or closing the achievement gap or any other number of issues that are really pressing K-12 education in the state.
We'll get to Professor Brighouse. I want you to talk about how you got in on this and what your reaction was when Representative Mason approached you. But we're getting close to a break, and I don't want to ask you a question and then have to cut you off so that we can get our weather breaks in on time. So we'll do that, and then we'll come back and we'll continue our discussion. Let me give the phone numbers again, 800-642-1234. 263-1890. Is there anyone out there who understands the school funding formula? I get a headache when I even start to think about it. Maybe you have some suggestions as to how we could change it or fix it, or maybe you think it's fine just the way it is. It's working in your district, so leave it alone. What do you think ought to be the role of the university in working on some of these problems? 800-642-1234, 263-1890, the numbers to call to join the discussion. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 17 after 7, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. Well, here's what's coming up later today. There's a lot being said on the campaign trail these days, and it's not easy separating fact from spin. After 5 on At Issue, Ben Marins talks with communications expert Dick Haven about the campaign trail today and how it compares with past campaigns. That's after 5 o'clock today, Ben Marins, At Issue, here on the Ideas Network. When we left off, we were just trying to get our arms around kind of an introduction of this topic and how we came to this, and we left Professor Brighouse. I wanted you to talk about how you got involved in this. We understand Representative Mason came to you and asked you about it. I won't ask you to discuss Representative Mason's activities as a student. We'll just leave that out of this. But talk about how you responded and what intrigued you about his idea.
Well, Corey, in the late 90s, when he was my student, I'm just going to say this, he found a philosopher who has a lot of interest in public policy, and he was kind of outraged that as somebody who had an interest in public policy and some expertise, or at least some knowledge, I wasn't directly involved in thinking about Wisconsin policy. And he was the one who introduced me to the Wisconsin idea. Subsequently, I had some experiences in the UK, which is where I'm originally from, of actually working, partly because of what Corey had said to me, with policymakers and legislators, specifically with regard to education policy. So then when Corey entered the legislature, he approached me to see, could we do something together? Could I help to sort of marshal university resources to think about education reform? And I was very pleased to do that, though very cautious as well, because I have some worries about the way that academics and the university are seen from the legislature and also by voters.
Well, that's certainly, I'm glad you mentioned that last part, because I was going to go there if you didn't. There are some people in the state legislature who are very suspicious of the university and quite honestly don't like it. So I'm wondering if you've had any response like that from people who say, hey, you know, the university is they're a bunch of lefties and we don't want to listen to them.
Well, Corey can tell you whether he's had that response. I haven't had that response, at least not yet. But I do have a strong view about what the role is, which is to provide expertise and information, to sort of analyze options, to present what you might want to do, depending on what you really care about. Some of the things that we'll explore, I think some people just won't want to do, and that's fine. It's if you reject something on the basis of your values, but if you reject something because you don't even understand it, that's a different matter.
Yeah, we actually had the first presentation on this, and we picked very carefully the presenter on this. It's Bob Lang, who teaches a graduate-level course at the La Follette School on the school funding formula. just to give you an idea of how complex and how much time you can devote to it. But he's also the director of the legislature's fiscal bureau. So he was a good first choice to roll this out because he's somebody who has an appointment at the university but also has a significant role to play with the university. We haven't had that response yet. We had 41 legislators and staff come to the first presentation, both parties, both houses. And I think it was genuinely appreciated by the folks that were there. I think to get beyond sort of this mistrust, though, one way to get beyond that is for the university and the legislature to interact more often. And I think the suspicion on both sides can start to abate. The other thing that I think that's important to mention, though, is the state gives the university hundreds of millions of dollars a year, in part to educate people and prepare them for the economy. But the university also does wonderful research on a whole host of topics. And it just seems to me a real shame to make that kind of public investment and not, as policymakers, take advantage of the research that the university is doing.
Let's take a phone call from Adam in Appleton. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, sir. I have enough objections to this kind of proposal, so I could probably be talking for 2 hours, but I'll try and limit it to three concise ones. My mother was a grade school teacher virtually all of her adult life. She was graduated from the School of Education at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She told me she thought that the poorest professorial teaching she'd ever experienced in her life was from the university's Department of Education. She said she didn't think it prepared her in any way to be a good grade school teacher. She felt everything she knew about that she'd gained from her many years of experience, not from the university. She thought that entire degree of education from UWM was a waste of time. My second comment is that there was a study that just came out on the way that students from our big public universities are equipped to understand Western culture and Western ideas and the United States of America and its history in particular. And UW-Madison couldn't get any better than 15th from the top on that list. And I imagine what that means is you probably got graduates from UW-Madison who think the American Civil War happened in the 1950s. And my last comment is that I had an argument with the former chancellor, Donna Shalala, about the fact that I thought the professorial teaching at the Madison campus for undergraduates was so poor. And she told me over public radio, and this is almost a quote, "The University of Wisconsin-Madison is a research institution, not a teaching institution. If a freshman wants a good education, he probably shouldn't come to the Madison campus." If you don't believe me, ask Donna Shalala about that remark that she made.
Well, I think what our guests are discussing, though, is using that research capability, and I don't think they're going to be calling on professors to teach members of the legislature. Correct me if I'm wrong, you're talking about using the research expertise that the university has in abundance.
I think that's exactly right, and it's not – we've worried about this interaction. I mean, we're worried about it seeming as though somebody from the ivory tower is coming down to the Capitol to explain to legislators how things ought to be. I don't think anybody's proposing that, and we're actually trying to be very cautious of avoiding both that perception and practice. You know, I can only speak to my personal experience as a University of Wisconsin graduate. I had some great instruction at the university, and, you know, my ability to sort of interact in public life has been enriched dramatically from the education that I got there. But I would say, even if somebody had that kind of suspicion about the university, again, I think both the legislature and the university benefit from both parties interacting with one another and hearing those concerns and watching each other interact to have better understanding about how the university works and the research and the resources that the university has to offer.
Let's spend some time talking specifically about what you'll be doing and some of the topics that you'll be discussing. You mentioned that you had a meeting last week. You've got a series of meetings planned to talk about these topics. Talk a little bit about that and the format and how this is going to work.
Well, the first two have been it was initially going to just be the first one, but Bob Lang told us that we really needed at least 4 hours to adequately at least try to take on the school funding formula, given its complexity. So the one that we have tomorrow is part two of the school funding formula with Bob Lang. But into the future, we're going to be discussing issues ranging from special ed education to and its funding to closing the achievement gap to the role of the principal and smaller class sizes in smaller schools, how do those work, really just invoking a range of topics that get discussed in K-12 and that we know that the university has a great deal of resources and does a lot of time, spends a lot of time and money researching. So the idea is just to get everybody in a room to create panel conversations and a real dialogue between legislators and staff and academics so that we're both parties are coming away with a better understanding, and hopefully that can lead to better policy.
Professor Brighaus, I wanted to ask you specifically, how have your interactions been with other university professors when you've approached them with this idea? How have they received it?
Well, there's a sort of mix of responses. One kind of response is, well, legislators won't listen to us. And the other kind of response is, yeah, we've got expertise and we should be using them. We should, you know, be presenting our ideas to the legislators if they will listen. So I do think there's a bit of skepticism on the university side of the willingness of legislators to pay attention. The caller exhibited, it's funny because the caller exhibited distrust in the university, but also exhibited distrust in the legislators. I do think there's a tendency for professors to think they know everything. And I say this as a professor, so I know what I'm talking about, to think that they know everything and to present their ideas as if they're sort of obvious and everybody ought to agree. I don't think legislators are going to take it that way. I think legislators are perfectly capable of thinking critically, of taking what's useful from what the professors say and discarding what isn't useful, making their own judgments and having their own discussions among themselves. That's what I've said to people. I've said, you know, you have to, when you do discuss things with legislators, you have to be a bit more humble than we're inclined to be as professors. But also, have some trust that the legislators can do their own thinking too, which I think they perfectly well can.
We're just about, we're coming up to news time, so we've got about a minute and a half or so left in this segment. Maybe a minute would probably be closer to the mark. And I want to introduce this topic, and we may not finish it before the news, but we'll pick it up when we come back if we don't. And Representative Mason, the current climate politically in this state and in a lot of other states is one in which there's the gotcha politics and the public posturing and less time being spent on really substantive questions and a lot of time spent positioning yourself for the next election. Given that as a context, what are your reasonable expectations for what you're attempting to do here?
Well, I start with the assumption that, I mean, it is true that in contemporary political society, it almost feels like people are always running and always sort of gearing up for the next race, even in a January of an odd-numbered year. But the idea behind all this is the belief that if you start out with a dialogue, you're going to reach better understanding both with the university but also with folks that are on the other side of the political aisle. It might mean that you find a way to disagree with one another on policy without being disagreeable and rude with one another. It means that you can actually understand where the other person's coming from a little bit better and what it's based upon. So the hope really is to get us into a dialogue with the university, but also with one another on real policy matters.
And we'll continue our discussion right after the news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. It's just about 7:36. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. This hour we're talking about getting the university's professorate together with the state legislature. Take that research expertise from the university and apply it to some of the problems that we face in our state. In this case, most notably, the problems associated with funding K-12 education as a starting point. And we're talking about that effort this hour with Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine, and Harry Brighaus, a professor of educational policy studies at the UW-Madison. We've got a caller who's been holding for a while. Before we get to that call, I want to give the phone numbers again, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. In Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890. Let's go to Steve in Lake Mills. Steve, good morning.
Good morning to you. Yeah, I'm a county supervisor in Jefferson County, and I feel the UW Extension System is probably one of the finest examples of a Wisconsin idea that exists. I lean on them constantly for expertise and their assistance in organizational skills or bringing in an expert to help us solve a problem. We have a group of five counties, a consortium, where all the chairs and vice chairs get together once a month. We pick 10 topics a year, and the extension brings in experts to talk to us about it. And I chair that group, and of course it's all chairs and vice chairs, so it's like herding cats, but it certainly is a great system for getting ideas out to policymakers. And I find that those that don't believe in the university and bringing its expertise in are either ideologues or fools. That's really all I've got to say, and I support this idea 100%. Thank you.
Steve, thanks for the call, and thanks for holding on. Well, this sounds like the model, Representative Mason, for what you're talking about the Wisconsin idea.
It does indeed, and it raises a very important point about the Wisconsin idea. You know, it has this historical relationship between UW-Madison and the Capitol from about 100 years ago, but since then, you know, the university is really, the borders of the state really are the borders of the university, and there are countless examples that people can point to with extension, even in my own district, trying to work on restoring the Root River. We're working with UW Parkside with an education center, and UW Milwaukee is helping with some of the landscape architecture that we're proposing. It's really important to realize that there's a number of resources that are out there. And I've found, by and large, when you engage the university to ask them to help address a policy issue or an issue that's important to your district or the state, by and large, they're really excited and thrilled that somebody asked. But what Steve raises is an important point, that this happens not just at the state level, but this happens at the local level all the time. We just need to, I think, encourage it more often.
Talk a little bit about, if you will, about how that first session went that you had last week, and maybe pick out some ideas that were generated from it. Or was this more about just sort of setting the tone or getting some general information out?
It was a little bit of both, I think. I mean, I certainly learned more about the way revenue limits work in terms of equalizing between districts. I certainly learned how the equalization formula works when the state redistributes money from the state to districts. And it was just really an opportunity for people to ask about really complex things like secondary and tertiary aid, these concepts that legislators hear all the time that affect specific districts very directly, but nobody had really kind of explained it to us before. So people were able to ask questions first in understanding, but then I think there were follow-up questions of, well, what if you did this or that to the formula? What would happen then? So it was a good first step, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, there were two things that I learned that were especially useful. One is that the revenue caps play a role in ensuring equalization, in making it harder for districts to be very, very unequal. And so they play what progressives would think of as a progressive role while they still keep, while their aim is really to keep property tax down. The other thing was that the funding formula is highly sensitive to the property tax base, to the property values, but it's not at all sensitive to the levels of poverty. So if you're a high property tax school district with high levels of poverty, things are much more difficult for you than if you're a high poverty property tax district with low levels of poverty. So that's one of the questions that we'll have is, how should things be changed? Should we try and make the formula more sensitive to concentrations of children who are very difficult to teach?
I think if you asked a number of people in the Superior School District about the revenue cap being something that helps to keep school districts closer to equal, you would get some serious disagreement.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has the effect of, it has a couple of effects, and Bob Lang was good to point out that the primary goal was to address property tax issues there. And it doesn't necessarily equalize things in a way that necessarily provides adequate education for everybody, but relative to one another, it's had this equalizing effect. And that's not to say that that revenue caps are the end-all, be-all, and that they answer things. It just raised a feature of the revenue caps that I don't think most people had thought about before.
Yeah, and just to add to that, when the revenue caps were introduced, the state committed itself to paying 2/3 of the funding, of the overall funding of K-12 education. In 1996, I think, the state moved back from that. So we still have the caps in place, which reduce the level of local funding, but there's also been a lack of commitment from the state to keep up its level of funding. The caps would be much less problematic if the state continued to do its 2/3 of spending.
Let's take a call from Bernie in Whitewater next. Bernie, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm joining the show late, but my primary thought is that for years I've believed that the K-12 education should be paid for entirely at the state level, 0% at the property tax level. I think there's a lot of truth to the Republicans' position, being a property owner, that we're really getting hit over the head with property taxes. And I see most of the waste at the state level in things like incarcerating drug offenders and highways we don't need, et cetera. That's where we can cut the budget and, you know, put it into education. I think property owners, I picture the elderly people, the people on fixed incomes that can't keep up with their property taxes anymore. It's tough enough for people that earn a good income to do so and, you know, feel you're getting any value back. So that's my first suggestion. And my second real quick is, you know, in education for 5 years out of college, I believe there's a lot of waste in administration, a lot of administrators that aren't really needed. And I think there's a lot of excessive money that gets poured into sports programs and things that aren't really relevant, whereas I'd say art and education is relevant. Just a few things to toss out your way. Thanks.
Bernie, hang on a second. Before you go away, I just want to ask you if K-12 education was shifted from the property tax to being something that state government pays for entirely, would you support an income tax increase, for example, in order to make up the difference in the dollars?
What I would support, I don't support any sales taxes, including on cigarettes, et cetera. I'd want it all out of a progressive income tax, but I believe the state would need to cut some spending in other ways. But I would certainly support a shifting into the income tax. But like I said, for example, the company I work for gets money from the state because it's in the IT industry, or at least one year did. There's a grant that wasn't even needed. You know, we're making money. There's so much waste at the state level, so much that can be changed in the way of policies. We could easily pay for it there. I don't know how much of a tax increase there would be, but that's certainly the fairer way to go because people that own property don't necessarily have an ability to keep up with the tax.
The property tax question has been a huge one in Wisconsin, and I want to make sure we have plenty of time to discuss your comments, Bernie. And so we're going to take our break now, and then when we come back, we'll have our guests respond. We're talking about the idea that we should be using the university's expertise and resources to help us to solve some of our problems in the state. And right now, the problem that's under discussion is funding K-12 education. My guests are Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine, and Harry Brighaus, Professor of Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. We'll be right back and discuss Bernie's comments and take your phone calls at 800-642-1234 and 263-1890 right after this. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network. It's just about 7:47. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. After three on Here on Earth, Jean Faraca and her guests discuss the roots and the implications of the Sunni-Shia Muslim conflict and lessons to be learned from a 1925 report by the League of Nations. That's after 3 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. Right now, though, we're talking about using the expertise and the research that's embedded in the University of Wisconsin system, which operates all around the state, as a means of supplying some expertise and applying it to problems that state government is running into. And this hour, the focus is primarily on K-12 education and how we fund it. And just before the break, we took a call from Bernie in Whitewater, who's interested in seeing the property tax eliminated as a source of revenue for school funding and that it all be taken care of at the state level. He's concerned about administrative waste, would rather see a progressive income tax used to fund the system, thinks we spend too much money on sports and maybe not enough on art. Well, we want to give our guests a chance to respond. Let me reintroduce them for you. Corey Mason is a Democratic state representative from Racine, and Harry Brighaus is a professor of educational policy studies at UW-Madison. And I think, Representative Mason, this one might be more directed at you, but I want both of you to respond.
Sure. Bernie identifies one of the big problems with the school funding formula, which is its reliance on the property tax so heavily. I mean, running for office last year, you'd run into folks who are on fixed incomes, who are retired, but the value of their house continues to go up. So one of the deficiencies of the property tax is it has nothing to do with your ability to pay. It has to do with the value of your house. And for some people, that's fine, but for others, it's not. And it often leads to this situation where, you know, people on fixed incomes, when they're asked about a school referendum, aren't, you know, necessarily bad people who don't want kids to learn, but they're really struggling with the property taxes on the fixed income that they have. So he raises this great question about, you know, what should the role of the state be? Bob Lang, I think, interestingly said that the state is really the biggest property taxpayer for the school funding formula. So you ought to think about it that way. The question that Bernie raises is, well, maybe we ought to be paying for all of it. But it is much easier to suggest a sweeping change like that than to build consensus for it overnight. And I think that's what some of the university professionals, I think, will encounter as they interact with legislators. It's easy to come up with solutions that satisfy an individual or a small group of people. Building political consensus around reform is tough work, and it's part of what we're hoping to accomplish by having these dialogues.
Yeah, I would just sort of talk. I want to say something about the other question that Bernie asked, or the other comment he made, which is about waste within the schools. And I think that there are two different kinds of school reform that you can engage in. One looks at the resource allocation, which is the funding formula, the how you're going to send money to schools, what you're going to be sensitive to. The other is organizational reform. Do you want to have smaller schools? Do you want to change the job of principal? Do you want to get rid of sports and encourage art, or get rid of art and encourage sports? And over the course of the next year, I hope we're going to be looking at both of those kinds of issues. But there is a complication, which is that the organizational issues, you know, Corey talks about how hard it is to build consensus around a big reform idea. It's even more hard to build consensus around, and even harder to then implement, organizational reforms at the school level or the district level, certainly when you're at the level of the state. So I'm hoping that legislators will come to, and that I will come to have a better understanding of those issues, and maybe also sort of some sense of how to shift the way that people think about them.
But isn't it, I mean, it's kind of a false dichotomy to say, well, we can either have sports or art, and because extracurricular activities and things like that are a fraction of what it actually costs to run the schools. And the largest single expense to any school district is people. And the biggest expense with people right now is health care. Until you deal with that, can you really seriously get at the problems of school financing?
Well, there's no question that healthcare reform in some capacity would have actually a dramatic impact on school funding. But we leave it to the conferees of the conference committee to iron out those proposals right now. At this point, we're really trying to discuss the school funding formula in and of themselves and other issues that are there. To address healthcare at a societal level would almost be a whole separate series. So I don't discount that it would have a real impact on school districts, and real healthcare reform would actually have a substantial savings to school districts. But getting at that within the context of a school series is difficult at best.
Yeah, healthcare reform done right, the governor or legislator who comes up with the right healthcare reform will make their name. It is a huge problem for business. It's a huge problem for schools, and. You know, there's only so much that can be done. I do think, though, that we should be looking, and I hope that our series will find a way of looking at things that districts might be able to do, for example, by consolidating into purchasing groups. hiring people to bargain better and harder with the HMOs. There may be savings to be gotten through that. I'm saying that without knowing at all whether that's feasible. But it is something that Corey and I have talked about, and we've been trying to think about whether there's anybody who can help us think about it, if you like.
Let's go next to Lee in Kaukauna. Lee, good morning.
The reason I was calling is more for a comment. I said, when we look at the school funding formula, I think we need to look at it as though each person that's paying now is actually paying for the education that you received when you were in the K-12 program, instead of looking at it as though I'm 50 now, I'm 60 now, and now I'm paying for all these young kids or someone else's kids. I don't think that ought to be the way we look at it when we look at the formula. And so if we shift it from all of it from property tax to income tax, which right now it's two-thirds is funded by the state. It's not quite funded that way, but that's the way the law is written. I don't think we should shift it all the way, because right now what you've got is you've got a dynamic of a large group of people, which I'm a part of, and that's the baby boom. If we now shift it all to the state-funded, which then it's going to be funded through GPR, which is mainly income tax and or sales tax, you're now going to be putting a major burden onto the people that are actually in the workforce, and a huge portion of the workforce is going to leave the workforce, and they're exiting right now in mass amounts. So I think we have to be careful when we redo this formula that we don't shift it all to that group, that smaller group.
Lee, thanks for your comments. Response, gentlemen?
Yeah, thanks, Lee. Lee's a perfect example that you could get Lee and Bernie in a room, and they would disagree about how to fund schools just with two callers. Building consensus around how to do it is really difficult. Lee's point about the way people look at funding schools, though, is an excellent one. It is a hard thing sometimes when people are discussing referenda in local districts, and you'll hear some voters say, not all, but a small number of them say, well, my kids aren't in the schools anymore, so I don't really care to vote in favor of the referendum. Lee's point is well taken. I mean, somebody paid for me to go through Racine Unified School District when I was a kid, and I have a niece and seven cousins that go through that system right now, and I'd like to see them succeed. And it raises an important ethic about how do we view school funding? Are we in it to fund our community and make sure that the next generation had the same opportunities that we had, or do we view it as something that, well, I've had my turn and now I'm done? So he raises an excellent tension that's there when we talk about school funding.
I want to get to make sure we get to this call. Mark in Lake Geneva, let's go to you next.
Hi. I'm really loving this topic. I'm a graduate student at UW-Madison in the School of Library and Information Sciences, one floor below the professor, and I think that WPR really exemplifies how we use our university system to bring information to the common citizen, and it would just be common sense to take it to the next level and use our university system to help explore options with the legislature from a lot of different advantages.
Mark, thanks for the call and the kind words about Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, there's no secret that the Ideas Network name, at least in part, comes from the idea of the Wisconsin idea. But this is sort of an extension, Professor Brighouse, of what you're talking about here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think what the caller says is absolutely right. And it may be that education is, not the... that's what Corey and I both know a lot about and are interested in, especially, but it may be that it's not the policy area which will most benefit from this. It may be that there are other policy areas, and I hope that professors on the campus and legislators with interest in other areas will take up those things and sort of try and form relationships and develop discussion. And I hope they'll use Wisconsin Public Radio as a way of making that discussion more available to the whole of the state, because that's a role that WPR plays, which is quite unusual.
Representative Mason, we've got about a minute left. I want to make sure we summarize kind of where you're headed with this. You have a series of meetings planned, and where can people get more information about what you're talking about?
It's a great question. A couple of places you can go. Wisconsin I will be recording at least the first two, and I'm hoping the series. So if people want to go to Wisconsin I, which is sort of Wisconsin's version of C-SPAN, they can see these things live or archived. And then if you want to go to my my website and go to the legislature's website, we'll have future events posted. The one tomorrow is in room 412 east of the state capitol. The public's invited to attend if they'd like to learn more about categorical aids and the school funding formula. And then just in closing, I mean, I think I don't want to kind of give this sort of conceit that Harry and I are the only two kind of thinking about the Wisconsin idea or using it or using this nexus between legislators and researchers within the university. But we are trying to make the idea stronger and bring it back in a way that maybe hasn't quite been done exactly this way in quite some time. So we're excited about the prospects for what it holds and really hope to do this in the best tradition of the Wisconsin idea.
Thank you so much for joining us, gentlemen. It's been an interesting hour.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine, and Harry Brighouse, Professor of Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. Karen Prager and Leo Duran produced this hour with on-air production by Karen Prager. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.